Tonight, a special treat for the start of the new autumn season, a frightful tale in honour of All Hallows Eve and Day of many names known throughout much of the world. Halloween in North America, Samhain to many around the world, or Hoptunar on the Isle of Man, and the Day of the Dead in much of Central and South America. By whatever name you choose, the end of the 10th month of October, in ancient times associated with the autumnal equinox, is a rather mysterious day of observance. While some cultures celebrate with children dressing in costumes and collecting candy treats from neighbours and friends, others consider the night of October 31st, All Hallows Eve, a frightful and dark time when the dead are free to walk the land of the living. It seems only right that tonight, on the Unknown Radio Show, we observe the season with a terribly dark and frightful story. A true tale set in a remarkable and mysterious New World city in the year 1838. The place is gay New Orleans, a city of mixed culture with heavy Spanish and French influence, but complemented with a high concentration of Afro-Islander mystic. It was a time of grand social awareness, where the Euro ruling class were exercising their success and freedom in lavish and fanciful fashion, staging grand parties and balls and festival celebrations to remember, while the poor, the working class, and especially the free men of colour and the slave labourers, the Creole and the Mulatta, a strange mix of African, American Indian, French and English mixed bloods, were practising strange forms of religion that combined Catholicism and island spiritualism. Magic of the Dark Arts. Following is our All Hallows Eve special presentation, a collaboration of music I have composed to reflect the season, and a frightful tale crafted and narrated by storyteller and author Logan Hawkes, seasoned with special appearances from the Unknown Radio Theatre Voice performers. Welcome to The Voodoo Queen and the Devil's Wife.
Throughout this world, there are truly many frightening places. From Castle Dracula, high in the Pyrenees Mountains of Eastern Europe, to Ireland's Bloody Chapel, the catacombs beneath Gay Paree and Scotland's infamous and haunted Mary King's Close. Deep in the Guatemalan rainforest, the ancient city of Tikal is alive with the sounds of restless spirits after dark. And Mexico's Real 14, a massive ghost town above the clouds, is a place to be avoided after dark. But while there are castles with haunted chambers, abandoned homes that stimulate and electrify the senses, and spooky and rural roadways that seem to lead to nowhere, there may be no single supernatural location in the world today more frightening, more haunted, more mysterious than the dim-lit streets, the shadowed alleyways, the hotels and inns and cemeteries, the shops and taverns and bayous of old New Orleans, deep in the plantation country of South Louisiana. There are few cities across the world that can rival the cultural and ethnic complexity of New Orleans, past and present. The city has celebrated a surprising and unparalleled reputation as a place of darkness and shadow. New Orleans, in fact, has always enjoyed a strange relationship and fascination with the world of the dead. Perhaps because so much has transcended the city, wars and plagues, slave camps and military occupations, pirates and hurricanes. From its ornate and Gothic cemeteries to the famous French Quarter. In the Crescent City, it's easy to find a ghostly tour guide, a psychic or medium, fortune teller, or even street musician that can and will, for a small price, treat you to the sights and places where spirits are said to roam freely and where the dead still walk the night. You can stop in at one of hundreds of small voodoo shrines and shops all across the city, where the ancient and magical arts of West Africa and Haiti still thrive on the streets of the Big Easy. and where you might be lucky enough to buy a charm or spell to help you find love or money or fame, or perhaps seek vengeance on your enemies.
And what can I do for you, sir? A look into your future, perhaps? A potion to bring your wife or your girlie to sweet passion and desire?
Oh, no, no. I need to break an evil spell I have reason to believe has been woven against me at the discretion of a jealous associate who has connections to people, well, like you.
And what kind of person would this be, mister?
Why, a gifted woman of some persuasion, of course. Skilled in a thousand ways, madame.
In New Orleans in the 1830s, if it could be sold, money could buy.
Combien pour le chien dans la fenêtre?
To understand the shroud of mystery that veils this balmy coastal city, we need look no further than its storied past. Founded by the Spanish, the ethnic composition of the city includes heavy French influences. The city was always a place where Africans, both slave and free, and American Indians shared their cultures and intermingled with Europeans who had come to seek their fortune. Encouraged by the French government, this strategy for producing a durable and flexible culture and a geographically difficult outpost marked New Orleans as different and special from its inception. The New Orleans Creole population has ensured that English was but a second language, with French and Spanish and African the primary languages of choice, where Protestantism was scorned and Catholicism deeply woven into the social structure of the city. And isolation helped nourish the differences. Even though steamboats and sailing ships quickly connected French Louisiana to the remainder of the New World, New Orleans jealously guarded its unique way of life. It became the world's largest slave market, for one, and soon, the richest city in the New World.
And today we have a grand offering of new arrivals from Western Africa. Just look at the sturdy build of these gents. Guaranteed to give you many long hours of plantation labor. And they work sun up to sun down. Let's start the bidding at $20 for Exhibit 1. A strong man and healthy man.
Look at that hunk of a man, dark and beautiful.
Constance, you are embarrassing me. Not so loud, others will hear you.
But he would look good keeping my garden.
The tall, dark one there. Strong one. I could use him in the field.
But all this diversity and all the amazing and often dark stories that could be told of the Crescent City, none, perhaps, are more gripping and tantalizing than the one of a remarkable woman named Marie Laveau, a free woman of color and a devout Roman Catholic. But Marie patronized more than just the gods of St. Louis Chapel. Through her first Haitian husband, she was introduced to the dark secrets of the Voodoo and Spiritualist, a religion that could trace its roots to remote jungles of Western Africa and regionalized in the islands of the Caribbean. With voodoo's countless deities, demonic possessions, animal and rumored human sacrifices, rituals were elaborate, steeped in secret languages, spirit-possessed dancing and special diets. It's easy to understand why New Orleans was and remains associated with the magical arts. The ancestral dead are thought to walk among the living during hooded voodoo dances. And a few bucks could always buy you a charm to help protect you from evil curses.
Madame, I believe a rash of bad luck has assailed me in recent days. Maybe the result of an evil spell.
Give me your hand. Yes, there is a dark magic working in your life, I see. And you wish a spell to break this spell, yes?
That's my thought, madame. I can pay well for a spell that works.
I'll need a piece of your fingernail, the hair from your head, a suitable payment, of course, to cover the cost of my powers. Nothing more.
Well, of course, madame. Whatever you need.
Many a politician would pay good money to a voodoo priest or priestess to cast a spell that would enable them to win an election. Even New Orleans' most successful and elite participated in the art of voodoo, buying charms to help them seek their fortunes.
Thank you.
Marie Laveau was born in New Orleans in 1794. She was of mixed black, white, and American Indian blood. Some said she was a descendant of French aristocracy or the daughter of a wealthy white planter. But it was her marriage to Jacques Paris, a man of color from Haiti, that provided her the chance to study the voodoo religion. Marie was a woman of distinctive personality, so it wasn't long before she began to impress and influence a number of the socially elite of New Orleans. She was a hairdresser by trade, and this is how she gained the audience of many of the finest ladies of the city. By 1838, Marie had become so popular among both the Creoles and the city's social elite that she was soon given the moniker the Queen of Voodoo. Each Sunday in colonial New Orleans was a day dedicated to the Congo dances in the square, a day when plantation slaves were allowed to mix with free blacks in performance and participation in the ritual songs and dances of the voodoo spiritualist. Even the socially elite would turn out to watch the colorful voodoo event. Marie was greatly beloved by those that practiced voodoo and by those that dabbled in the black arts. For in early New Orleans, it was necessary to carry a charm or two to stave off the elements of dark magic. Marie Laveau left her mark on New Orleans. When not casting spells or concocting potions or dancing in Congo Square with her pet snake, Zombie, Marie was known to nurse the sick and dying in the Creole neighborhoods without charge to the poor. Soon she won the hearts of her followers and was admired among the rich and famous. Upon her death, she was interred at one of the famous and historic city cemeteries in New Orleans. Her above-ground crypt is still a popular tourist attraction, and more so, a place where voodoo pilgrims still visit each day, bearing gifts of money and flowers and herbs. Even in death, it seems, Marie Laveau remains the infamous Voodoo Queen of New Orleans.
Watch over me, Marie, and take my humble gifts in tribute to your greatness.
Watch over me, Marie, and accept my humble gift and grant me your favor.
I call on you, Queen Marie, to accept my gift.
But while Marie was generally considered a positive force in New Orleans, not all initiates of voodoo are remembered in such a positive light. Such was the case of famous socialite Delphine Lalaurie, who employed Marie Laveau as hairdresser in the early years of their relationship and eventually as a teacher of the dark arts. Where Marie was anchored with a spirit of benevolence, Delphine took an entirely different turn. She was greatly feared, even among the voodoo community.
Thank you.
Now, Marie, I have learned so much from you about the magic voodoo. I enjoy the spells you've given me, the recipes for the potions. But I want more. I know you harbor more powerful spells. And these are the ones I want to learn. Teach me, Marie. Teach me, and I promise to pay you well.
There is great responsibility in such things, Miss Delphine. One must be careful when learning such dark magic, as it will consume you.
Oh, Marie, I promise to be careful and judicious. But teach me all that you know. I want to know your deepest, darkest spells.
Delphine Lollaret had everything the rich and influential of New Orleans could ever want. A remarkable French-style home in the heart of the quarter. An elaborate social life full of grand balls. She wore only the finest imported fashions. Fresh fruit and meats and imported coffees were served at her table every day. And she lived a charmed life. Her rambling home sported three levels. An elaborate ballroom for entertaining, landscape grounds and gardens, and slave quarters in the rear. No less than a dozen servants and slaves catered to the family's needs. Yet not all was as it seemed at the Lollaret estate. Some suggested that the Lollarets kept a number of particularly healthy and attractive slaves that were used to treat their many friends and guests. There were rumors that sexual favors were performed by the slaves at those gay social affairs. Both men and women slaves were offered to preferred guests, and there was even talk of deviant acts of passion, sadistic practices performed at the demand of the guests.
Now you a fine specimen of a man. I do wish for you to tend my tired muscles, and I prefer that you remove your soul clothing lest I contract some dread disease. Wash yourself, then wash me as well.
I would like for you to dance for me. Let me see your passion.
Before long, there were instances of strange noises coming from the Lollaray home. There was laughter, but also the sounds of moaning and chanting. Screams could be heard late at night. Before long, the slaves in Madame Lollaray's employ lost their gay spirit. Their smiles were gone. Perhaps the workload was too great, but it was apparent there was a growing fear among them, and not all was right at Mansion Lollaray. More than once, a passing officer of the law, hearing screams from the top floor of the mansion, would knock on the door and inquire.
I thought I heard screams. Is everything all right here, madam?
Why, yes, officer. Truth be told, we are having trouble with some of these new slaves. Thieves and cheats, I fear. And we must deal judiciously and harshly as the crime they want. But there is no problem here. Thank you.
Thank you.
For reasons unknown, Voodoo Queen Marie Laveau refused to provide service any longer to Madame Delphine Lanleray. Some say it was over a payment dispute. Others say the magic Marie had taught to the Lady Lanleray. There was a spreading rumor that Marie had even cursed the home of the Lanlerays, displeased with how the voodoo arts were being used there. It was in early October when servants that worked in the mansion reported screams from upstairs on the third floor. There was Madame Lanleray's voice, elevated and agitated, screaming at one of her female slaves. Shortly thereafter, there was a blood-curdling scream, a thud in the garden behind the house, and when servants rushed to investigate, they discovered the lifeless body of a young Creole servant lying dead on the ground. Madame Lanleray explained she was disciplining the young girl when she slipped and fell over the balcony railing. But secretly, among the other slaves of Lanleray House, there were many unspoken concerns. Less than a month had passed, and an air of silence had fallen on the house of Lanleray. The gay social gatherings had ceased, and some said Madame Lanleray had become a different woman. She would frequently disappear to her attic workshop, where it was said she was indulging in the darkest of black arts, casting spells and creating powerful charms and potions. The slaves were no longer allowed on the third floor. Master Lanleray had been leaving the mansion more frequently, traveling for several days on end, and Madame Lanleray would spend her endless hours behind those closed doors, but not alone. Caspin the cook, an older slave long in the employ of the Lanlerays, knew in her heart there was something dark and sinister about the mansion and the things that went on there. She, more than any other, knew many of her fellow slaves had disappeared, mysteriously. And being the only slave with a room inside the mansion proper, she could often hear the moans and screams coming from that attic office. And she knew something terrible was taking place behind those doors.
Thank you.
It was late one evening in balmy May when Caspin the cook intentionally set fire to one corner of the kitchen, causing smoke to bellow out the open windows and doors of the lower floors. Upstairs, in her magical workshop, Delphine Lollaret was tending to her dark arts and unaware of the development down below. Caspin had reasoned if there was a fire, the local fire brigade might be given the opportunity to enter the mansion. And once inside, Caspin could direct their attention to the upstairs attic, where, at last, someone could see what was happening behind those closed doors. By the time Fire Captain Felix Lamont reached the Lollaret home, smoke was billowing out the back windows of the first floor. The balmy air was filled with the smell of trouble.
Open up, fire brigade! Open up inside! Your home is on fire!
Come this way, please! There's a fire in the kitchen. Two, maybe three men can put it out. But I need for the captain to see the fire in the attic, at the top of the stairs.
There's a fire in the attic?
The fireman looked up the wide staircase and back at the cook. Caspin looked up the stairs and back at the captain of the fire brigade.
And hurry! Break the door down! Just be careful what you find inside.
What transpired over the next anxious moments has put a scar on New Orleans history and has plagued 1140 Royal Street for generations. As Captain Felix Lamont rushed to the top of the stairs carrying his axe, with Police Inspector Henry McMurtry in tow, he spotted the heavy wooden door directly across from the landing and immediately could hear human sounds beyond. There were whisperings, a woman crying, and there was moaning, the moaning that haunted the captain for the remainder of his years. Placing his hand on the door, it was cold and damp and locked from the inside, and beat the door until he created an opening large enough to slip his hand through and pull open the metal bolt on the other side. The door immediately swung inward. And what the fireman and inspector saw was a scene reserved for the stages and halls of hell. There were bodies lying in the floor, slumped in chairs, shackled from the ceiling, stretched beyond physical endurance. Some were dismembered, missing a hand or foot, in some cases sporting a limb that had been removed and crudely sewn back on the body.
Holy Mother Mary, Captain. What has happened here?
And a few were seriously wounded and suffering from most cruel and diabolical torture. Some of the bodies were hooked up to some type of strange instrument. Genitals had been severed or removed, and it was evident these helpless and tormented souls had been subjected to the most horrible acts of wickedness. A few had missing eyes or ears, and most of the living, what few remained, were altogether senseless and mindless. Delphine Lollaret was nowhere to be seen. The room was empty except for the horrible tragedy of its victims. But there were signs, evidence, a cauldron boiling in the corner where human parts could be seen floating in a smoldering, musky liquid. There were bottles and vials and packages on the shelves and sitting in open cupboards and countertops. Black candles dripped their molten wax upon the blood-stained floor. The smell of decaying flesh was undeniable, and the inspector could no longer hold back his dinner. A second fireman rushed to the top of the stairs and joined the duo standing at the door of death. And before long, commissioners began arriving, detectives, politicians, all wanting to see firsthand the butchery of Delphine Lollaret and the horror inside.
Holy Mother of Mary.
Sometime during the ordeal, Madame Delphine had managed to flee the house before being trapped inside, wearing little more than a cowl and a wrap to hide her naked body. It was learned later that when she performed her heinous crimes, she did so stripped down to nothing but a golden amulet that hung from a heavy chain around her neck. Some say she fled to the shores of Lake Pontchartrain, where many of the voodoo elite are said to still gather in the swamps and forests to perform their rituals of magic. Others believe the incident itself came to an end because Madame Marie Laveau herself, the voodoo queen, had cast that spell to bring the Lawleray dynasty down, ending a reign of terror and bloodshed in the famous French Quarter. For even the Dark Queen of New Orleans magic could not tolerate such unobstructed violence and evil haunting the streets and people of the magical Crescent City. As for the infamous mansion Lawleray, it still stands on Royal Street in the French Quarter of New Orleans today, having changed owners often over the course of its 200-plus years. It seems to be a place where no tenant, resident, visitor, or owner can ever come to terms with the lingering horror that may still walk the hallways of that eerie building. In the 21st century, there are still reports of screams and moans that can be heard from the top floor. More than just a few still say that the woods near the lake are still haunted by Delphine Lawleray herself, who still leads the darkest of souls in ritual and ancient magic in the swamps of southern Louisiana. Our advice? Enjoy the music of Bourbon Street. Dance to the music of New Orleans jazz and blues. Taste the flavors of Mardi Gras and stroll the parks and museums of this remarkable city. But curtail your desire to delve into the dark and mysterious. For many things still happen in the Big Easy that are unexplained. Enjoy your visit, but most of all, stay clear of the mansion Lawleray
after dark.
right here on earth, where you need the blue tea, way down yonder in New Orleans, New Orleans.
Marie Laveau, the Voodoo Queen, and Delphine Lalaurie, the Devil's Wife, is an original production of MindQuest Radio. Thanks for joining us this All Hallows Eve special, Theater of the Mind. This and other programs are available on demand at janus.soundfuturesdirect.com. The MindQuest Radio players include Lisa Truitt, Sydney Szymanski, Teresa Ong, Kyle Landwalker, Sally Autumn, Kevin Cook, Carla Land, and yours truly, Jim Wilson. Narration from Logan Hawks and original music score from Janus. Happy Halloween from MindQuest Radio.